What's up, guys? Welcome to Kinda Funny Games Daily for Wednesday, January 10th. I'm Tim Geddes, joined by Gary Witta, because it is Witta Wednesday.
Hashtag
Witta
Wednesday.
Witta Wednesday. Very excited about this. This is Kinda Funny Games Daily, each and every weekday right here on twitch.tv/kindafunnygames. We get together, talk about all the video game news you need to know about. You can get it on youtube.com/kindafunnygames when it goes up as a VOD. And thanks to you, we're now over 230,000 subscribers on that channel. So thank you. Thank you very much for that. The push to 300K begins. Let's go. If you haven't already subscribed, please do that. It means a lot to us. But if you're just an audio listener, guess what? This show is available on podcast services around the globe. So it's great. Everybody gets to partake in this beautiful, beautiful thing that we do right here called Kinda Funny Games Daily. What else? What am I missing here? KindaFunny.com/KFGD to be part of the show. You can write in your questions like we're going to answer later. And also throughout the show, you got to keep us honest. So you can go to kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong where anything we get wrong during this episode. And since I'm on this one, it's probably going to be quite a few of those. We'll check them out at the end of the episode and correct it. So we're getting our facts straight. You know what I mean? It's going to be a good time. How you feeling, Gary?
I'm feeling good. I'm not loving the weather right now. It's a little windy and chilly here in San Francisco, but otherwise.
It's in that weird in between where it's either raining or it's about to rain at all times, and it just sucks because my hands are freezing.
I always tell people who are interested in visiting San Francisco, they say, when's a good time of the year to come? And I you never know, but I always say, like, avoid January and February because that's the rainy season. Yeah. I do like it when it's really pelting down like it was the other day. Like,
do you?
Yeah.
I'm not a rain guy.
I don't like being caught out in the rain, but like I like being inside when it's raining outside. Mm. It feels very cozy.
Mm. You know? But there's always the risk of the power going out.
Yes. Hold on.
Thanks to the power of the Nintendo Switch, you can keep playing your games.
That's right. You can still, just not online.
Yeah, exactly. So, little housekeeping here. We hit 230,000 on YouTube. Thank you very much for that. And this episode is brought to you by Rover and Lisa, but we will get to that later. For now, let's start off with what is and forever will be the Roper Report. Today we have 3.5 stories.
A baker's dozen!
The half, because one's not really a news story, but it's something that we want to talk about because it's setting the internet ablaze right now. So let's start off with that one, and that is the Nintendo Direct announcement. Or should I say, the lack of an announcement of a Nintendo Direct. So Gary, are you caught up on all this right now?
I'm getting caught up on it. There's been a lot of movement in just the past, 48 hours?
Yeah, 48 hours, lots been going on.
And this is the Nintendo way, right? They don't tease these directs. Events
not too far out,
far ahead of time.
Yeah, like, so you know, in the Switch era of directs, because things have been different in the past, but even in the past, it's typical for Nintendo to have a big January direct that kind of announces what they're doing, or at least starts putting the crumbs for the rest of their year, and even this during the Wii U era,
right?
But on the Switch, it's only been a year so far, but tomorrow will be the 1 year anniversary. 2 days from now will be the 1 year anniversary of the Nintendo conference, the presentation they did in Japan that was the blowout of the Switch,
when they first revealed it.
Everything.
Okay.
When we first saw like the actual trailer for Odyssey and all that. We saw a little bit of in October.
Was that the It's Time to Switch? Was it that?
Yes.
Okay.
The really awkward Japanese.
I have fond memories of that.
Yeah, I have memories of it. I don't know if they're fond. But yeah, that when they announced kind of all the games that came out last year, Xenoblade Chronicles
right.
2.
Right.
And
with the weird live action arms. Videos for arms
yep.
and
one,
two,
Switch and all that. That's where that was announced. So it would be the 1 year anniversary of that where me and Kevin were out in New York and it was a lot of fun covering that. But we've seen kind of, there was the E3 conference that they did, their direct, and throughout the year there was directs focused on specific games, which is par for the course for Nintendo. They'll do the ARMS specific one or the Xenoblade specific one. But usually, and this year they've added the Nindies showcases where two times in 2017, they did their directs that were purely focused on indie games coming to the Nintendo Switch, and those are great.
Because that has become a big part of the platform.
Totally, and it's been a huge success for them and for the indie developers. But since E3 came and we saw all the kind of announcements of the latter half of 2017 games, we're kind of in a point now where we don't know what's coming in 2018. We know there's a Yoshi game. We know there's Kirby. We know Fire Emblem's coming eventually.
Yeah.
But we don't really have any like concrete dates. And that isn't enough to have a follow-up year. If Nintendo's planning to sell another 20 million coming up this year. They need more than those games, especially coming off of a year that had a 3D Mario and a 3D Zelda.
Right.
So we got a question here from Lee Poehler. So what the hell is going on with the Nintendo Direct? It was heavily rumored to happen on the 11th, but it's now the 10th and still no announcement. However, Nintendo Twitter accounts are posting single images with no context, obviously trolling fans. Personally, I'm loving the chaos, but I know many are losing their minds. Do you think this incident will teach some gamers not to believe rumors? Or do you think that because of the rumors, Nintendo gets to have fun with their fans and so they hype up rumors even more? I would love to know your thoughts.
I'm also Team Chaos.
Yeah.
I love it. It's all part of the fun. Like, it's not fun if everything is announced ahead of time. The surprise, you know, mic drops, that's what makes it fun. And the very kind of vague, kind of teasing tweets that Nintendo are putting out right now where you're trying to, like, decrypt the meaning of these images and stuff. To me, that's all part of the fun.
Yeah, I love it too. And it gives something on the, like, on gaming forums for people to speculate and to have conspiracy theories. And I'm all about that. I will say it's at the point now where it is getting a little bit ridiculous because there's so much evidence pointing to there being a direct in January at the very least. And these dates would line up and make a lot of sense with it being the anniversary. And also with a lot of Nintendo Switch leakers, the people that have had a lot of information correct in the past, having it on good authority that there would be direct this week.
Well, I would just say, just on the Twitter activity alone, if you're seeing all this flurry of activity now, that to me suggests sooner rather than later, like probably like imminent, I would guess.
Yeah, so the first kind of sign we saw of this actually being a thing was a couple months back when Electronic Arts or EA document leaked with an outline of a couple of their game plans, including A Way Out and its release date, which was later confirmed to be true, and also that game FE that they announced at E3 last year. And on part of the docket, because this was an internal document that leaked, it showed that Fee will be announced, or Fae, whatever it's called, will be announced to be coming to the Switch with a release date during Nintendo's January Direct.
Right.
So they said there would be a January Direct.
Right.
And since the other information was correct, that'd lead you to believe this is. Then a couple weeks ago, Amazon posted, how many was it? 18 placeholders for different SKUs for Nintendo Switch games that didn't include ones that already had placeholder things for games that are coming out. So there was one already for like Fire Emblem Switch, but there wasn't one for like Shin Megami Tensei or whatever. So it could include those. But it also went up to some that were $99. So you got to assume some of them are collector's editions of whatever game there is. So today, GameStop fucked up and put a tweet out saying, get ready for the Nintendo Direct in 45 minutes, and then took the tweet down. And
if that's not a smoking gun, what is?
Yeah, but I mean, that information was wrong regardless, because it wasn't a Direct in 45
minutes. Even the nature of the mistake suggests that if you're not 45 minutes, maybe tomorrow, maybe the day after, something very soon.
Yeah, so they took that down, and then quickly after that, people that worked at GameStop did some sleuthing in their internal systems and found that 6 Switch SKUs were added to their internal database.
Okay.
So there's some stuff.
So there's a preponderance of evidence that is building.
Yes. And Nintendo's Twitter, the Nintendo of America Twitter in the last couple of days, specifically yesterday and today, has been very suspicious, to say the least.
Yes.
On January 5th, they posted an image of that little parrot from Super Mario Odyssey that tells you hints about where the moons might be.
Right.
And the caption was just, "What is the secret you're seeking? I know it. I know it. Ha ha. I can't tell you. It's hiding somewhere and no peeking. Go find it. Go find it." And then skrka. So that was on January 5th. They retweeted that yesterday.
Okay.
So they're really digging it in there. Okay. And then today they posted an image of Chibi Robo. Just kind of like this, which is fire.
Right.
and they're loving it.
Yeah. And again, we call it chaos, but of course this is the result. What your every tweet that comes out and everything that apart from the leak. So all these official Nintendo messaging tweets, it's not chaos. It's part of a very carefully orchestrated campaign. The result of like hours and hours of meetings where they figured out how are we going to
exactly
lead up to
what
this?
They're doing.
How do we create the excitement?
On the Nintendo New York Twitter, for the Nintendo store in New York, they posted a very random image of a Mii in a hot dog costume that seems totally out of place.
Yeah, what the hell was that?
And compared to all the rest of their tweets, it's like, what the fuck is this shit? But what's interesting, so Stealth, who is a very known Nintendo leaker, was saying that everything that I've heard suggests a direct that will happen tomorrow early. They need to announce this soon. And he was saying that he talked to people that have good authority as soon as last night, saying like, hey, this is happening. This is weird. He's like, but I'm not going to believe anything until it's officially announced. And Laura Kate Dale, who's another one, was also like, she's retweeting a lot. And she was right. Just like, yeah, I don't know about this. Like, and I'm not going to confirm anything.
In the history of Nintendo Direct rollout, so that is there typically like an official, like, here it is, it's going to be tomorrow, like, yep, an official confirmation, like sometime before it actually happens?
Yep. Going back a very long time, but especially in the last year since their new kind of Switch stance has happened, we've heard about directs no earlier than 2 days before,
okay,
and no later than 1 day before.
And the key to me is no later than 2 days before. You've seen these images. Clearly, they're built. Again, this is all part of a plan. They're executing that plan. It's coming together. My prediction is, I think you could, this, my prediction would be this week.
Yeah.
I think you'll see it before the end of the week. Because, you know, it makes no sense for them to build up all this anticipation and then not do anything for a while. Like, you're kind of squandering the, you know, these things that you're building to a crescendo.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's going to be very soon.
Yeah. And
that might be wishful thinking because I want to see it.
Exactly. So Stealth also reached out to some of his friends over at Nintendo of America and some people that run the social media side. And they confirmed that they are entirely trolling, that they are reading Reset Era. They're reading all the forums. They right. see the chaos going on. And like
but I don't think they would be doing that if they weren't ready to back it up.
Yep. And that's the thing. Who knows? Nintendo is weird and has done weird things in the past.
God bless them.
Yeah, exactly. But with this, it's time for a direct. We do. There's a lot of questions that need to be answered.
Yeah.
And now is definitely the time. There is a hype to Nintendo Directs that doesn't really exist for any other type of press conference. E3 kind of being the one exception to that, because that's kind of an industry-wide thing where everyone's excited, everyone's making predictions. Oh,
like the Apple press conferences are the only thing that I would think have.
Like, well, there's a lot of people talking going into it.
And people are like, it's coming, and yeah, Apple will kind of tease something is coming.
But the Nintendo Directs are unique in the hype cycle that happens across the internet, like gaming forums, where this Nintendo, just the discussion about when the Direct might be announced has already reached like 500 page threads of people just going nuts and predicting.
I think it's
happen.
Very, very clever. I think Nintendo Direct is a piece of marketing genius. I think if Nintendo threw their lot in with Microsoft and Sony and Ubisoft and Activision and everyone else at E3, like, it would just be another story. But doing it on the, you know, they stand apart from all that. They do it themselves on their own time, on their own terms. And they own the news cycle, and they create all this excitement in a way that you wouldn't get if it was just rolled into E3 or some other big event.
Yeah. Now, the problem that they're facing here is this is more hype than Nintendo has ever put into its own Direct.
Yeah.
And that's a little scary, because I've been burned many times as a Nintendo fan overhyping the Directs.
Right.
And going into E3, I did my best to not hype myself up, to be like, hey, I'm expecting a lot, but I'm hoping that they, you know, don't fuck this up. And then not only did they not fuck it up, they announced Metroid Prime, they announced Pokemon, like, they blew my expectations out of the water. So now this Direct, the things that people are predicting, the things people are hoping, the things I'm hoping for, it's in another stratosphere.
In the history of Nintendo Directs, are you saying that more often than not, you've kind of walked away from them kind of disappointed?
Yeah, I would say in terms of the ones that are the big ones, the ones where they're like, we're going to talk about a bunch of games. And I've been wrong because of the last E3, but with that being the exception, I feel a lot of the times people overhype themselves. I've learned to really trust what Nintendo says in its description of what the event's going to be. If they say, hey, we're going to show a Splatoon 2 trailer and give an update on ARMS, don't expect a Metroid Prime 4 reveal. Like, they're going to talk about ARMS and Splatoon, and that's it.
Right. They don't do one more thing.
Yep, they don't do the one more thing.
Right.
And these bigger directs, which now I'm hoping we see a trend of E3 and January every year, kind of January being the first half of the year and E3 being the second half of the year for Nintendo games, could be exciting, but I don't know. I mean, people are expecting Metroid Prime 4 gameplay trailer. People are expecting details and real substantial stuff on the new Pokemon game, like maybe Mother 3, Pikmin 4. Smash Brothers. Like, well, there's so much.
What's so interesting about this, and what you said about how this feels different. It is different. We're in a different Nintendo era. The Switch has changed everything, right, for Nintendo. Nintendo has always been the plucky underdog. We love them. But they've always been, you know, certainly for the last few systems, kind of scrapping away in the corner on their own. But the Switch has come in and just dominated. And now I do think that the anticipation is there because of that. And we were talking about this before the show. I feel like, you know, Reggie can come out to this direct like with some real swagger, because yeah, like they're the man right now, right? They're killing it with the Switch. And so I don't know if that changes how they approach this direct. But certainly on the fan side, I think that has created more anticipation, because we've had this incredible, the Switch over the past year has been this incredible success story, but all the big games that were part of that, Mario, Zelda, ARMS, Splatoon, they're out there. And so the question now is, okay, what's next? What's next?
And that's the thing, Reggie coming out with the swagger, like, he needs to be able to back it up, and they really need to bring, there's very few things they can do to match Mario Kart, 3D Mario, proper Zelda,
right?
And those things to me would be, to the hardcore gamer, Metroid Prime, to the every gamer, Pokemon, and Smash Brothers. If you don't have those, and Animal Crossing, that would be the other one.
I would love, and big. Animal Crossing is so perfect for the Switch too.
But besides that, they can't just roll by on Kirby and Yoshi. You know, those are great games, but they're not on the same caliber.
Well, what I think is so fascinating and frustrating and interesting and different about Nintendo is they don't, it's not that they don't care, but they don't, I don't think they let what the fans are saying they want influence what they do. Like, you never quite know what you're going to get, because it's not like, oh, we know that we've got to check these boxes, so let's check them. They're just going to do what they want. And there's all, when you look at a direct, I think historically, sometimes you get exactly what you want. Here's the new Metroid, here's the new Smash Brothers, here are the kind of the bases that we have to check every generation. But sometimes
it's, they'll
resurrect
Robo,
some franchise that you weren't even thinking about. Like, oh geez, they're bringing that back?
Yeah.
I mean, so what's personally on your wish list? Like, what would be your top three things that you would love to see revealed?
Oh man, I'm in a weird place now where I want to see Pokemon, and I understand that it's early for that, but I'm so interested, and I need to know.
Just like
what
a mainline Pokemon?
Yeah, mainline Pokemon, which they've already announced is coming, and it would be early in 2018, but I've heard that Nintendo's putting a lot of pressure on Game Freak to get it out. My big question is it traditional, and is it just kind of continuing what we've seen, or is it going to try to Breath of the Wild eyes the Pokemon franchise and innovate it and change it? So I want to know that. Smash Brothers is definitely the other one, but we're in a weird point now where for a long time I wanted a Smash 4 port, but are we too far gone from that? Like, do we now start teasing Smash 5?
I think we are. I understand, you know, like when they announced Mario Kart 8 Deluxe, I understand they kind of felt like we need something to kind of fill out the roster. We need to check the boxes to launch the new system, but for whatever reason we haven't been able to, or we're not ready to release, you know, Mario Kart 9 yet, or whatever it's going to be. So let's give the old one a lick of paint. People are and it is a great upgrade. You know, they Absolutely. Did a great job with it. But it is what it is. It's a game you've mostly played before. And I think they got away with that because it was right in the launch window and we all understood that. Now, a year on, if they were to say Super Smash Brothers Deluxe and it was just the Wii U version with a lick of paint, that would be disappointing. I think we're far enough, the console is mature enough now that whatever, if they're bringing back Smash Brothers or Metroid, we are expecting the true next generation game.
Well, we know we get the next gen Metroid. To me, I just feel like we're in a weird half step with Smash Bros. Smash Bros. Anything, I'm gonna lose my mind to be excited for. I actually want Smash 4 on Switch now, and I would love a deluxe version, especially if they added some new characters. I highly doubt if Smash 5 comes out we're going to get the entire roster that we have in Smash 4, and there's so many characters like Cloud, Ryu, Bayonetta that I don't want to lose going into the new one. And also with Smash's development cycle, I don't think we'd see Smash for years, especially if Sakurai, the director of the previous games, is working on it, just because of the way that he works. And I'm like, I want Smash now. I feel like we're still in a window where I want them to get all the Wii U ports over, and they're doing it with Bayonetta 1 and 2 coming out as well.
Right.
But Captain Toad needs to get over here ASAP. The Donkey Kong Country games need to get over, and I think Smash is the other one that, like, it's time. If we don't hear about Smash 4 coming in this direct, they're not doing the port, and it will just be the next one. But if it is the next one, I want to start hearing about it now.
I'll make a prediction. It's a pretty vague one. I do think you'll see Smash in some form, because it's too...
At this direct?
Yeah.
It's it's exciting.
I think they'll. Even if it is just a deluxe, which I think will be slightly disappointing, but people will still, of course, snap it up, and the preclude, you know, five down the road. This will be a long generation.
The thing about four, the deluxe version, that's different, I think, than Mario Kart is Smash 4 came out on 3DS and Wii U, and were different games with different maps and different features, like single player features. So, Smash Deluxe on Switch could add a substantial amount of content combining the two together. So there is something there, especially if they added new characters.
Yeah, I mean, Smash is the kind of game where just even a few new characters added to the roster is enough for people.
Yep, definitely enough for me. Like, that's all I need. I love that shit. Scribble Not Sequels, probably a shoe in there. We've been seeing some leaks for that. Another big question is Virtual Console. Is it time? Are we going to hear about Nintendo's online infrastructure?
Nintendo and Netflix or whatever.
Whether
Nintendo
it's Netflix whatever or it is. Whether it's traditional virtual console.
I think that, given that they have already spoken about that and it's been a while since, I feel like, yeah, come on, where's the update? And if they do a big event and they don't talk about it, that will be conspicuous by its absence.
I feel like that the virtual console or whatever it is news is going to come alongside the online infrastructure news. And I'm not convinced that it's going to be during this Direct. I can kind of see this Direct focusing just more on game announcements and game updates. And I can see them doing a separate event just for the online stuff, unless Smash is part of this. Because I feel like Smash and online go together so well that Nintendo couldn't just launch the online thing and be like, hey, now you need to pay for online without a game to back that up.
You're right. A great way to launch the online service would be with a flagship title that you would play on that service.
And with Nintendo, that would only include Splatoon, Smash Brothers, and Mario Kart in terms of... But I don't think ARMS is big enough for like, hey, here's a new multiplayer game that you have to pay to play online.
Nintendo's multiplayer flagship games are Kart and Smash, right? It's those two.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we'll see, man. It's a very exciting time, and who knows? Maybe the Direct has been announced while we're recording this show. Let us know at kindoffunny.com/you'rewrong. Now to get to the first real news story. Cyberpunk 2077's Twitter gets its first update in over 4 years. The Polish developer CD Projekt Red first announced Cyberpunk 2077 in May 2012. After a few brief teases, the studio went silent, and now, for the first time in nearly half a decade, Cyberpunk 2077 has reemerged with a juicy, tantalizing message. Beep.
Just the word beep?
Just the word beep with asterisks.
Yeah.
In front and behind it. This tweet was the first official message on Cyberpunk 2077 since December 2013, where they tweeted out, saying that the Cyberpunk 2077 teaser trailer has won Machinima.com's Inside Gaming Award for Best Trailer of 2013. So, cool. The hype cycle's starting on this one.
Obviously, always interested in anything that Project Red are doing, right? I mean, they're top developer, great games. I feel like there's got to be a better... I mean, has the word Cyberpunk been... When's the last time that word was cool? Like 10, 20 years ago?
I feel like it's ripe for a comeback, though. I feel like them coming out with a game called Cyberpunk 2077 definitely speaks to a large group of people.
It feels like a Philips CDI game from 20 years ago or something.
But I feel with Blade Runner making its comeback now and with that kind of aesthetic being cool again, like that retro 80s, like there's nothing more overused than...
Maybe that's what it is. If the whole idea is just kind of like a throwback to the era of, you know, that kind of William Gibson... Johnny Mnemonic. I mean, nothing, that's the thing, nothing really great. I mean, you know, the original literature aside, nothing really great ever came out of the cyberpunk era. I guess maybe Deus Ex, but like, what were the great cyberpunk games? You know, it's tough to find examples of those. Yeah. But again, I mean,
anyone were to do it, it'd be them, right?
Yeah, I mean, it could be called Shit Fart Bongos, and I would want to play the game because it's from CD Projekt Red.
Oh man, put that on the box.
Yeah, you've now got your title for this episode.
I mean, the exciting thing here is they're talking about it. It's been quiet for so long, so this means that E3 probably will see more about this.
There's a lot of teasing tweets going on today. Which is the theme that's emerging here.
Now, moving on to the next story. No teases here. This comes from Kotaku. For the first time in 11 years, the Japanese console game market has grown. Over the past few years, the console market in Japan, both hardware and software sales, has been sluggish. In 2017, however, that changed. According to Famitsu, hardware sales experienced a huge spike in 2017 compared to the previous year. In 2016, Japanese hardware sales were 117.5 billion yen, so $1.5 billion, while in billion dollars. Well, in 2017, they jumped to 202.37 billion yen, which is $100.81 billion. Software sales also increased. In 2016, they were 163 billion, and the following year, they were 169 billion. A big part of this increase is due to the Nintendo Switch brisk hardware sales. The PS4 has also continued to churn out steady numbers. The last time the Japanese gaming market saw an uptick was in 2006, when the Nintendo DS Lite, the Nintendo Wii, and the PS3 launched. Kind of makes sense to me when you look at it, especially when you break down that last thing they just said about, yeah, so when the PS3 and Wii launched, Wii obviously being one of the highest selling consoles of all time, and the PS3 being the successor to PS2, another one of the highest selling consoles of all time, two very Japanese companies, that makes a lot of sense. I feel like that gap goes into the Wii having its kind of decline and fall.
Yeah. And then the Wii U never really being a barnstormer. And then the Wii U
totally not pushing anything. And the PlayStation 3 kind of taking the sidelines to the 360 dominating the conversation worldwide. Granted, Xbox has never been big in Japan.
No.
But I feel like last generation, especially with the rise of Xbox Live and first-person shooters really kind of dominating the console wars, the PS3 was kind of just there, and it kind of got second fiddle to a lot of the multi-platform games. And it was just, it was a weird time for Japanese games.
Mm-hmm.
But now to see the PS4 completely dominate, and to have so much focus on games like Persona and, the like,
I mean, a total domination in Japan, because I mean, did they even bother releasing the Xbox One in Japan? I don't know.
That is something I do not know, but I'm sure they did. I'm sure they did eventually.
But I mean, you know, I certainly know with the original Xbox and with the 360, they tried, particularly with the 360, they tried very hard. I mean, there was a specific effort to really push the 360 in Japan. Remember, they paid a lot of money for
Final Fantasy 13.
Yeah, for JRPGs. They really tried to make an effort to market it for the Japanese market, and Japanese consumers just said, nah.
Yeah. I mean, that's because they're not used to it. And you see that here. And with the Switch being the success that it is, and with PlayStation 4 being the success that it is, this makes a lot of sense. But hey, it's good news for gamers everywhere.
Yeah.
Final news story. This comes from Kotaku again. This is a CES news story. I'm very jealous that I don't get to be there right now, because me and Kevin love all that tech and stuff. And yet Greg Miller is there just putting around. Like a big puff.
Staring at those new hot new TV sets.
Oh, and I love them. Do you see the new LG that they're showing off?
Is it called the Nano? It's called something stupid.
There's multiple ones. There's the Nano. There's Nano-cell. Also the W series, which is the TV we have, but 88 inches and absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I'm what, like 20 grand or something crazy? Yeah,
and then there's the rollable one. It's like paper. It's like a poster you can roll up the TV.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't know what, there was something called an LG Nano Cell. I don't know what that is, but like that, maybe that's their next generation of panel. I don't know.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Very exciting times for
and
everybody.
Also all kinds of crazy shit like Bitcoin miners that you can like Kodak has a Bitcoin Kodak miner.
Doing, yeah, what?
What the fuck is that?
Who the fuck would have thought? NVIDIA's Freestyle is like Instagram filters for PC games. Because we've ran out of good ideas, folks. Image filters aren't just for photo mode anymore. The latest version of NVIDIA's GeForce Experience app introduces Freestyle, a series of special filters that change the way games look while they're being played. It's a bit of a trip. Freestyle is basically an extension of NVIDIA's Ansel, the screenshot tool introduced last year that helped players produce stunning images from games like Mirror's Edge 2 and The Witcher 3.
Mm-hmm.
But where Ansel requires players to pause their games to apply filters and take snapshots, Freestyle changes the way games look in motion. Available filters include everything from simple changes to color and saturation to full-on sketch graphics. There are even options to correct for color blindness, something all games should have but many forget to include. To use Freestyle, you need a recent NVIDIA graphics card, and you'll need to be playing a supported game. So I saw a bunch of videos of this. It kind of looks like, did you play Uncharted 4?
Yes.
You know how there was like that photo mode?
But yeah, then, and people were able to get some really stunning photographs.
There was filter mode as well, where you can like do things, make it black and white, or make it look SNES game or whatever. This is kind of that, but for many more games, and it's just useless. Like, it's great to get pictures and stuff, but playing games this way, it's like when you have these powerful graphics cards that are meant to make the games look as real and beautiful as possible, this is just such a marketing thing, just another thing to put on the box of like, it reminds me of the Creative Sound Blaster card days where they'd be pushing sound cards for computers.
Yeah.
And they're trying to convince people, like, you'll get a couple frames per second better on your video games if you get this sound card. And then on the sound, it's just a fucking sound card. There's nothing special about it. But there'd be a dinosaur on the box.
Yeah.
And the next one had like an alien with fucking laser guns. And it's like, it's a sound card, guys. Like, what do you do? This feels like that, where it's like they ran out of things to push. So like, we can't push teraflops anymore. Let's just add Instagram filters.
I gotta say, I don't like it. I don't like it. And and I'll tell you why. Because I would say, I would put my shoes in, at the end of the day, you pays your money and he takes a choice, right? If I buy a game, look at this way, this is how I would analogize it. If I go to a fancy restaurant and order like a really good steak, like top quality, and then when it comes, I put fucking ketchup all over it, I've paid my money, that's my right to do that. As the chef, I'd be horrified. Because I've labored to make this steak in such a way that it's going to be the best taste experience possible. And as an expert in chefing, I feel like I've been able to do some pretty good work. If you come along and slather A1 sauce all over, you fucked it all up. And it may be what you want, but like, it certainly wasn't what was creatively intended. And if I'm the art director of a video game who has worked very hard, as they all do, to create beautiful lighting effects and color palettes and, you know, and color timing and everything, same way that a cinematographer does to make a film look a certain way, and this is what is artistically intended for you to experience. The same way, like the same way people don't like letterboxing, right? Remember when you say, "Well, people that watch, you know, pan and scan movies." We're past that now, but there was a period where people, you know, or motion smoothing, like it fucks up what was creatively intended.
Yeah.
This is that. If I'm the art director of a game and I'm worried that now when people get the game, they're going to put their bullshit filters over it and create something else that was not what I wanted you to see. Again, it's your choice, but what is this? This feels like, you know, people are running out of ideas, but they need to keep giving you things, and so you get nonsense like this. This is like the selfie stick of
video games. Let us know in the comments if you like this, and hit us up at kindoffunny.com/KFGD to let us know if anyone's excited about this. Now it's time for the official list of upcoming software across each and every platform, is listed by the Kind of Funny Games Daily Show host each and every weekday. Out today, Energy Invasion.
This is the shortest list I've seen yet.
Yeah, Wednesdays aren't really good for game releases. Energy Invasion, PlayStation 4, and Vita. Albert and Otto, The Adventure Begins on Xbox One, a favorite of Kevin Coelho's. That's a lie. He's never heard of it. And Space Hulk Ascension on Xbox One. We got a new date. We got an email from the people making this game. They want to let you know about Planetoid Pioneers, the cooperative sci-fi physics-vania. That's a new one. Where geriatric astronauts explore the asteroid belt beyond Mars, it'll leave early access to launch on PC on February 8th, 2018.
That's geriatric funny. Astronauts.
Why not? You know,
I'm not. You've got my attention.
And now it's time for the deals of the day. Alex Bobko says, here's a deal I found from Wario64 on Twitter. Again, if you're not following him already, please do. He's fantastic. And you got to keep up
that
with
guy's
all
the
deals. He is.
He's a machine with those deals.
It's Titanfall 2 on Newegg for $7.50 plus shipping. Use code EMCXEEP33 at checkout. It's a great game if everyone hasn't played it. And it's a must get for this price for the campaign.
Yeah, alone. Everyone tells me that campaign's really good.
Now that I got an Xbox One X, I think I'm gonna.
Is it optimized
pick
for One
it up.
X?
It is okay. Optimized. So I think I gotta hop on that. And speaking of Xbox One X, GameSpot says Xbox One X deals. First and foremost, one is on eBay being offered by highly rated seller Antonline. So that's Antonline. It drops the usual $500 price of the system down to $460 and throws in a free copy of Overwatch Game of the Year Edition. That's the version of the game that includes everything from the Origins Edition along with some free loot boxes. This Xbox One X bundle is new and unopened with free shipping available in the US, though it can also ship to other countries. A limited quantity is available, so who knows when it's going
to
sell out.
Where do you go to get this? eBay?
eBay. And the seller is Antonline.
Okay.
Or Antonline is probably what it is. They're also offering a nice deal through Newegg. Over there, you can pick up the console for $4.99 and receive a free $50 gift card to Newegg, which can be spent on games, controllers, or anything else. Free shipping is also available for the offer, which runs through Saturday, January 13th. And through Newegg, Ant Online is also selling an Xbox One X bundle with PUBG and Ghost Recon Wildlands for $5.19, or PUBG and Overwatch Game of the Year Edition for $5.30.
So, these are not exactly doorbusters, are they? But if you're looking to save a buck, it's better than nothing.
If you're planning on getting the system, might as well save something. Yeah. So there you go. Now it's time for reader mail. Reader mail today brought to you by Rover. You should check out Rover. If you're like me, you love Greg's dog, Portillo. Man, he's a little hassle though. We're always trying to make plans, and Greg's like, I can't come. I can't do it because I gotta go walk Portillo. Well, guess what? Thanks to Rover, you can have someone else walk the dog. Someone else that you trust, because they are the dog people and they make sure that everyone's vetted, everyone's good. Hey, vetted. See what I did there, Kev? You can go to rover.com/kindoffunny for $25 off. Are they seeing this right now? Are they seeing the happy dogs doing all the happy stuff? That's fantastic. Fantastic. Rover.com is the largest network of five-star pet sitters and dog walkers in North America. Serving pet parents across the U.S. and Canada, Rover connects dog owners with trusted pet care whenever they need it. Millions of services have been booked on Rover, including pet sitting, dog walking, in-home dog boarding, and doggy daycare, which sounds so fun. I just want to hang out at a doggy daycare.
As a as the proud person of a new puppy.
Oh, yeah?
This could be irrelevant to my interests.
What's their name?
Her name is Luna.
Luna.
She's she's a Havanese, which is
never assumed gender, Kevin.
A breed I didn't even know existed. But she's adorable, and I think I'm going to bring her in next time.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. If you need dog sitting, if you need dog walking, rover.com/kindoffunny.
All right.
Greg signed up to book Porty so he can walk him, so that Porty's taken care of on Thursday while we go to see Nick's comedy show that you guys should all check out if you're in the San Francisco area. So we're going to make a vlog, and we can only make that vlog because of rover.com. So that's fantastic. What else am I missing here? Greg says it was easy to sign up. He requested a lockbox, and he's comforted by the fact that only 20% of sitters who begin their profiles are ultimately accepted to begin Rover. Pet sitters, they're very thorough in that whole thing. So for $25 off your first booking, visit rover.com/kindoffunny. You know what else, Gary?
What else?
This episode is also sponsored by Lisa. Lisa mattresses. Let me tell you about the Lisa mattresses. With over 10,000 five-star reviews, the Lisa mattress is in a league of its own when it comes to combining quality, innovation, and making a difference. The Lisa mattress is 100% American made and delivered compressed in a box to your door. So when it comes, you open the box and it does that nice little poof, and then you get it. I just had to buy a new bed.
I got one of those internet mattresses, and I do say it's kind of magical. When like one of those, it's like one of those, what do you call them? The sea monkeys. You put them in the water and they...
And they grow.
And they inflate.
It's magic. Yeah. And then I had to buy a new bed recently. And man, these things get real damn expensive. So I'm happy that people like Lisa are out there helping
us
out.
You're going to spend a third of your life on it, so get a good one.
It's true. Man, it's a lot of money. But the Lisa mattress is... Let's see. Lisa's price started just $525. For an extra $100 off, go to lisa.com/kindoffunny and enter promo code kindoffunny. You can avoid all the awkward showroom situations having to deal with anybody, because no one wants to deal with people. You just go to the website, lisa.com/kindoffunny. Get the mattress you need. It's an easy time. $100 off. lisa.com/kindoffunny. Now it's time for reader mail. Let's see. Where do I want to start today? Let's start with JFlame26. He says, hey, Gary, this one's for you. Which game are you looking forward to the most this year? Also, I wanted to thank you for your book, Abomination. It was a great read. Will we ever see more Adventures of Wulfric or another book from you? Thanks for the daily gaming news. Keep up the great work.
Okay, so which game am I looking forward to the most this year? Well, Red Dead. I mean, I didn't have to think about
it. That's
it? I mean, there's a handful that I'm excited about. And my answer may well change after this Nintendo Direct.
Because
Who knows?
Who knows, man?
It's got to be Red Dead, right? I mean, what else? What even would be in contention?
I mean,
that?
There's just nothing cooler than Red Dead Redemption. It's like, hey, Grand Theft Auto, but it's a Western.
Yes,
I'm sold. I'm in.
Yes, I mean, and it looks so good. And I love the first game was just. It really is one of those games that will just stick in my. If you like on my deathbed, if you ask me, like, what are the games you remember playing? That Red Dead Redemption is going to be in that conversation.
Yeah,
it just stuck with me. It's just a truly legendary game. And the idea of a new one next gen is just, yeah, I mean, that's my answer. And thank you. I'm glad you liked the book. I don't know if I'm going to do a sequel to that particular one, but I have been toying with the idea of finding an idea for another novel. So maybe.
Next one. Let's go with Benji.
The only thing I just wanted, one other, just as an addendum to that. The only thing I'm disappointed by with the new Red Dead is I wish they had found a different title for it. You had Red Dead Revolver and then Redemption. I wish it had been Revolution. Like Red Dead something as opposed to just
Revolution
Red Dead,
was the one everyone
Red Dead
was
Revolution.
About.
I wish they had continued that theme, but maybe they kind of felt that Red Dead Redemption was so.
That was the one that hit.
Well, it's just because it was such a big deal that they didn't want to mess with the, you know, the name recognition.
Yeah.
And also because it is very much, you know, it's a sequel, it's an extension of the extension of that same story. Because Revolver to Redemption wasn't, right? They were different characters.
I never played
Because that was the first game. People forget about Revolver. Yeah. But that's where it all started. Maybe they just felt like as a sequel it made. But I don't know. Just personally, I wish they had kept with that tradition of a different vibe for the title every time. The I mean, Red Dead alone is like, you know what you're getting.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah. Benji says, hey guys, do you think games today take too long to finish? I think it's great to have good games last as long as possible, but at the same time, I'm less inclined to buy certain games because I know I'll never finish them. With that in mind, do you think we'll see more shorter and less expensive games like Hellblade or Uncharted Lost Legacy gain in popularity in the coming years? I don't think games are too long. I think that we're finally at a point that different experiences exist in across the board where there are super quality long games, there's super quality short games, the super quality medium games. Like I'm happy with where we're at. I prefer shorter games. Like I remember back in the day when it was an exciting thing to read in a magazine, like this RPG has 80 hours of content. I was like, I'm going to get so much out of this. But where we're at now, there's so many more games than there used to be back in the day, and I don't have time for all of that, so I prefer the shorter experiences. Having said that, I think that the longer ones do need to exist, and as long as the quality keeps up, they're never going
to
go away.
I like the fact that there's a good variety out there. I mean, there's, you know, if you like long games or short games, there's plenty out there to tickle your fancy. I will say that as someone with a lot of demands on my time, you know, I'm busy at work and then I got a family, like the time to actually sit and go, right, video games, I don't have as much time to do that as I wish. And so if you tell me, like, it's funny, a lot of what is unattractive to people that are like more hardcore gamers and have more time on their hands to play, the things that they don't like are things that I respond to. Like if someone says, well, a game's too easy, I'm like, sign me up. I like easy games. Or if you say like a game's too short, I'm like, great. Because I wanted, it's nice to be able to get into a game where I can see the light at the end of the tunnel, where I know the end. I like to finish games. I like to see that they have the complete experience. So it's nice to know that it's realistic that I will. I played plenty of games that I never finished because they were just too long and sprawling, and at some point my interest kind of waned. So the idea of a game that I can, you know, see from beginning to end without it feeling like this epic time commitment, that's attractive to me. At the same time, I just thought about a game like Red Dead. That's not going to be a short game. It's going to be an epic game. Mm-hmm. But for every now and again, when a game like that comes along, like Red Dead or something like you're back in the days when Mass Effect was something we cared about, like that was a big deal as well. And for those games or the next GTA or something that's going to be truly epic, I will carve out the time. I'll make an exception. I'm going to make the time. I don't care how long Red Dead is. I'm playing all of it. Yeah. I know it's going to be an amazing experience. But like I've got Nier Automata right now. And I want to play it, but everything I read about, oh, you know, it's a really big game, and if you want to get the best out of it, you got to play it like multiple times with multiple endings. Like, I don't have time for that anymore.
Yeah.
I'm
got a dog.
I've got a dog. You know, I've got probably more years behind me than I do ahead at this point. I got a family. I'm backed up on work. Like, it's hard to find the time. And so the bite-size experiences where there's a lot of, you know, great stuff packed into a relatively short amount of time, that's increasingly what I'm looking for. But again, when the truly exceptional ones come along, like the Red Deads, I will find the time.
Yeah, it's funny because I mean we've talked about Uncharted Lost Legacy a lot, and I know
that's a shorter one.
Yeah, it's shorter. Okay, it just came out. It's kind of like it started as single player DLC.
Yeah,
and it kind of spun off into being its own thing, but it is also still downloadable. Me and Greg disagree on this, but I really enjoyed it for being a shorter experience, and I feel like Uncharted actually benefits from that because the Uncharted games are some of my favorite games of all time, and I consider multiple of them 10 out of 10s.
Yeah.
Having said that, I do feel like they get a little long in the tooth, and it kind of gets to a point where every single one has the narrative story problem of, okay, we got to do all this stuff to get here, and then once we're here, that just tells us somewhere else we need to go. And then you get there and it's like, oh, now we need to go there. And I feel like, I mean, it's too late for this now because we're four games in. They're amazing. But had Uncharted been an episodic style game, not in the way that Walking Dead is, but in the way that Lost Legacy kind of put this out, where it's a bunch of just small adventures that over time, if like, let's say they came out once a year and right. it was annualized and we got that story kind of building in, it would remind me more of like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, where you know you're going to get these movies and they all are building into this kind of mythos, but we don't need the experience to be 10 hours at a time. It could be 3 hours at a time. I personally feel like that would have.
That's what I mean. That's kind of what the Half-Life episodes were, and what I would have loved them to continue to be. Remember, after Half-Life 2, you got episode, you know, the two episodic pieces that came after it, and they were more bite-sized. I mean, they were still pretty big. There was a lot of game there, but manageable. And I think the hope was that, you know, you would go to that kind of model. Because I agree with you. I would rather have. Let's say Uncharted is, I don't know what you would really consider it. Let's say it's like an 8 hour game, and Uncharted games come out every 4 years, something like that, 3 or 4 years. I would rather have a really great Uncharted 2 hour experience every year than an 8 hour experience every 4 years. Do you know what I mean? Because it gets parceled out more, and it feels like it's getting refreshed on a more frequent basis. And again, I can manage those games. I can find the time to play those to completion. It's hard. I mean, Uncharted is a weird example because, I mean, I feel weird sitting here complaining about Uncharted because we're so lucky to have those games.
Absolutely.
They're so great. But yeah, I increase. I mean, it's why Telltale, I think, have been successful with their episodic model. It's like, you know, it gets delivered in bite-sized chunks and you've got time to play it, and then the next one's going to be right behind it. I would like to see more like that. The indie scene, of course, does that very well. Games that are shorter and you know, you can manage your time to play them more easily.
My dog Nick96 says, "Hello guys. I'm a fan of video games, obviously, and I love reading stories of the industry. There's a great series of books called Boss Fight Books, each book being a different game and writer. My question is simply, what book would you contribute to the series?" My guess is that Greg would write a book about either Patapon or Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker. Happy Widow Wednesday. I was actually at Green Apple Books, which is a local bookstore in San Francisco, and I saw they have this really nice showcase of all the Boss Fight books, including Alexa Ray Correa's book on Kingdom Hearts 2.
Yeah, and didn't Chris Kohler do one on Final Fantasy?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's...
Yeah, those are good books.
Yeah, it's cool.
There's a Mario one, right?
There's a whole bunch of them. There's like 20 of them.
Yeah.
It's really,
like, really deep dive histories into those games.
I mean, everyone's... It's different. Like, they're not necessarily deep dive histories. I think it's like Alexa's isn't a deep dive history. I think it's more of like her experience with the game.
Okay.
Or whatever. But yeah, like what pops into your mind of like what... If you wrote a book about video games, what would it be?
I don't know if it's Boss Fight, but I am actually writing a foreword for a book like this that's coming out. I'm not like, I can say what it is because it's not been announced yet, but it's either for Boss Fight or a company like them that does these kind of books. There was a really good one that came out recently. I can't remember who from, about the Bitmap Brothers and the history of their games. It was really great. And they are, what's so nice about them is they often are really, you know, very lavish and beautiful. And so some of these books are just books that you sit down and read, but there's a whole genre now of like really great coffee table books, lavish art, and you know, just, you can just, all the memories, all the nostalgia comes back. There's an Art of Atari book where all the great Atari cover art was kind of reproduced.
Yeah, there was one for the NES as well with all the
and I love that, and I love this genres out there. So what would I contribute? What book would I contribute? I don't know. I can tell you that I can think about the ones I would certainly like to read. Again, my experience is different. Like the books, the games that I care about, you have to remember in the UK and US, we kind of grew up on parallel tracks. When you think about, you know, your gaming nostalgia, you're thinking about what, like NES?
Super Nintendo,
yeah. Master System, Mega Drive, Apple II. I grew up on the Sinclair Spectrum and the Commodore 64, and there was a different
Commodore 64, different first track. Console I owned.
Oh yeah,
my dad got it at a
so there was set. Yeah, there was some crossover. I always remember feeling like Apple II was the more American version of that, like because most games came out on both, and I got the and I was playing on the Commodore 64 side. So like my nostalgia is like, I would talk about games like Manic Miner and Jet Set Willy and Saber Wolf and Night Lore, and games that mean a lot to me, but probably don't mean a lot to the predominantly American audience listening to this. But I mean, it's a fascinating, you know, the guys that did like Saber Wolf and Night Lore ended up becoming Rare and did GoldenEye and Donkey Kong Country and all those games. But yeah, I have a very different parallel nostalgia track that is more about the 8 and 16-bit computers. Commodore Amiga was like a huge, you know, gateway drug computer for me. Mm-hmm. That was my first job in the video game industry, was writing reviews for Amiga games back in the late 80s. So it's frustrating for me as someone who lives in America, because often the games that I want to geek out on nostalgia, I talk about games that my American contemporaries don't necessarily know of, or unless they're like really hardcore, then they know everything. Yeah. Like some of my friends know every single game, no matter where it came from in the world. But for the most part, like the games that I just mentioned, Manic Miner, Jet Set Willy, Saberwolf, and Nightlaw. How many of those rang a bell for you?
I only know of them because of Rare Replay.
Right.
And that's the only
reason. Oh, that's right, because they got put into that anthology.
Yeah, otherwise, no.
But it's often nostalgia is often a very lonely endeavor for me, because I don't have a lot of Brits to talk about those games.
Huh, man, that's interesting.
Yeah.
That's cool.
What would you want?
I feel the only thing that I would have anything interesting to say about would be about the culture of the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater games.
That's interesting.
That'd be, because that's something that I definitely, like, those games shaped who I am. They shaped the music I listened to. They shaped how I dressed and eventually how I dress. And
really? Was that?
Oh, yeah.
That impactful on
you? Totally. Yeah. I mean,
were you like wearing like skater stuff?
Yeah. Stuff, because like skater, it opened up this culture to me of like underground hip hop music, which.
Right.
Which
you might not otherwise have been exposed to.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like you're only exposed to the radio and stuff. And like the skating culture meant so much more than just skateboarding, because it added all these layers of, you know, clothing and of music and of just like style and slang and all of this. And man.
Were you interested in skateboarding outside of that?
Because of the game, yeah.
Oh, but the game was your way into
absolutely
the skate culture.
I feel like so many people, like I was in late elementary school and then early middle school when that franchise first started. And like when Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 2 came out, I was, I think, in sixth grade, which is like that perfect time of being like a 11, 12 year old kid. And it's like, oh, I'm going to skateboard. I was never good at it, but
I think it's a great idea. I would definitely read like a long read article or a book about the kind of the history of the Tony Hawk games and their kind of cultural impact. And you think about people being interested in those games because they like skateboarding and they know Tony Hawk is a cool dude.
Yeah.
But I don't think about it going the other way, like actually getting you interested in skateboarding and the music and the fashion and everything.
Music's definitely the biggest part. I mean, those games, the having the licensed soundtracks, I mean, a lot of video games, now it's just kind of standard where Grand Theft Auto, of course, has all these games. And Vice City, you know, the soundtrack made that game so special.
Over the years, I definitely remember being introduced to a lot of music, because I don't really listen to a lot. You know, I like what I like, but I don't listen to a lot of radio, or I'm not very good at discovering new music. But through the years of like playing various sports games, you know, where you're increasing like music curation was, you know, you think about when EA puts out like a FIFA game now or whatever, like there's a whole effort that goes into like what's the music that's in the zeitgeist right now that's going to appeal to our audience. And someone really curates all that music from established bands, up and coming bands, like getting your, if you're like an indie band, getting your track like in a FIFA game or something, that's a big deal.
Totally.
Because people will hear it and go, what's that? And you go find it, you know, you go figure out what the track was. Sometimes it pops up, you know, this is this track and this artist. And there's a bunch of artists and a bunch of different songs I still listen to today that I know I discovered through their appearance in video games.
I never played Madden ever, because I don't really care about sports. But I would download the Madden soundtrack every year just because I liked the style of music.
Because you can think that they've probably done a good job of curating some cool music into the soundtrack.
Yeah, but yeah, no, definitely licensed soundtracks have influenced me a lot. Like besides Tony Hawk, like NBA Street Volume 2 is another huge one.
Oh my God, my favorite, DJ Cucumber Slice.
Yes.
Oh my God, yes. I still remember... They reminisce over you. I discovered it. This is exactly what I'm talking about. From that game.
See?
And that's Nelly, that's Not In My House. Uh-huh. Right? Remember this?
Oh my God, I love this. But yeah, They Reminisce Over You, that song specifically.
What a great song. And I would never have heard it were it not for that game.
And hearing that in that song, that led me down a path of like wanting to look into that
whole
style.
I didn't even
so
know about
more.
That whole kind of subgenre of hip hop.
Yep.
Whereas it's kind of almost kind of like hip hop kind of, it's kind of got like a language kind of lounge vibe to it. I never knew about that music, but TROY, right? Mm-hmm. They Reminisce,
Over,
Reminisce
you,
Over You. And Not In My House. House, and there was at least a half dozen other tracks on there, and I fondly remember DJ Cucumber Slice. SSX3, yep, which had more of an ambient kind of chill.
Yeah.
Trip hop. Yeah, kind of a trip hop kind of vibe. And I discovered Andy Hunter, mm-hmm, through that. I discovered Queen. I again, this is how like clueless I am. I didn't know who Queens of the Stone Age were, but they were on that SSX3, and I got into them. You know, I probably had already heard of Fatboy Slim, but there were some like deep Fatboy Slim cuts on that album. Groove Armada. You've got me started now.
It's so good.
So much music.
And even in addition to that, you were talking like Queens of the Stone Age. For me, it even goes further with Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 in particular. That's when the soundtrack kind of widened. Before that, there was usually just like 12 songs a game.
Right.
Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4, I think, had like closer to 50. I'm pulling that out of my ass. But there was a lot of music.
Right.
And it wasn't just the underground stuff, and it wasn't just those kind of like, hey, this is cool music. It also went back to like classic, like AC/DC, Iron Maiden,
yeah,
and things like that that I never grew up with, but that was my introduction. And I'm like, this is fucking awesome. And it's like an education process in the history of popular music.
No, and it is a great gateway into another kind of culture, another kind of, you know, entertainment that I wouldn't usually, because you think about it, I guess it's a stereotype, but I certainly was one of those gamers and still am to a large extent. Like, I like film, I like television, I like video games. Every now and again, I'll hear a song on the radio that I like, but I'm not out there. I'm not going out there like looking for music, or I'm not educated about like what new music is coming. I can't tell you like who's in the charts right now or what's cool. And so I don't get exposed to a lot of cool. I know it's out there, and I know I would like it if there was a way for me to discover it, but I don't make the effort, and I don't engage with like, you know, the radio. I don't listen to a lot. I have Sirius Radio in my car, but I listen to the fucking 80s station. I just listen to the shit that I like. It's hard to discover new music, and it's a very low return rate because you end up hearing a lot of stuff you're not interested in. But I would say 80% of the new music and new bands that I've been interested in or been exposed to over the last 10 years have been through video games.
Yeah. And I wasn't the guy either. Tony Hawk's Pro Skater made me that guy.
Yeah.
That made me, that's part of being somebody that is interested in music discovery is part of my identity.
Yeah. And you hear one totally song from one band that you like, and you go check out that band, and you find you like other stuff and other bands like
them. I would go to Tower Records and buy an album just because
like
Goldfinger, for example. They did Superman in the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 1 soundtrack. I bought that album just because I'm like, I like this song.
Right.
And I love them. So. Yeah.
To this day, I still have an SSX3 playlist on my phone.
It's great.
I love it.
I love this. What
DJ Atomica.
This is so fun. Let's do Squad Up. We're rolling a little long here. This comes from Nibby Nubby on the Xbox One. Please, for the love Nibby of all Nubby that is mighty, squad up with me on PUBG. The two friends I have an Xbox, I'm normally a trophy man myself, rarely play this marvel of a game, and I hate squatting up with randos that have no microphones. I'm pretty decent at PUBG and easily make it to top 10 each round. So I promise you, your time will be worthwhile. Help me, Kind of Funny Games Daily homies. You're my only hope. So that's Nibby Nubby on Xbox One. NIBBYNU.
The name alone. I like the name Nibby
Nubby. Help him out, man.
My God, I can't imagine playing PUBG without having like comms with your teammates. You're just going to get murdered.
Man for themselves. All right, I'm looking up kindoffunny.com/you're wrong. Let's see what we got wrong. Getting through this. James the Kuma says EA's Faye is in fact pronounced Faye. Just for your clarification. Thank you for that.
What else you got?
Let's see.
You anticipated a high volume of your wrongs.
Yeah. Slot B just says Nintendo of Europe retweeted a tweet from Darkest Dungeon 3 hours ago saying Nintendo Switch release date announced on January 18th. So
another
new
indie,
date.
Another indie favorite.
New date, January 18th.
Coming to the Switch.
James the Kuma, call me out, which I guess says, I don't know if there's actually any 500 page threads yet. Reset Error's thread on the direct rumor says only hit 456 as the time of writing. It'll hit 500. I guarantee it. The direct still hasn't been announced. People are saying Billy Idol released the album Cyberpunk on June 29th, 1993.
I remember that.
James now.
I think that might have been what killed Cyberpunk.
James the Kuma says Xbox One came out in Japan September 4th, 2014.
It did. I wonder how it's doing.
Capitalist Pig says the name Cyberpunk 2077 comes from the fact that Cyberpunk 2077 is based on the Cyberpunk 2020 pen and paper game, pen and paper RPG from 88.
Okay. doesn't sound like we actually got a lot of stuff wrong, just like additional information. Yeah, just kind of
additional shit.
I'm not getting contradicted on anything.
Sprocka Rock says, Tim, another reason the gaming market is down in Japan is the huge use of mobile for gaming out in the East. The hybrid nature of the Switch is big to fight that mobile market out there. And yes, the Xbox One was released in Japan. The big surprise, it's selling very poorly, like 100 consoles sold a week.
That's 100 a week? Makes you wonder if it's worth even shipping them out there.
Kebab says, some stats on the Xbox One sales in Japan. The launch console sold 23,500 units in its first week.
Oh, that's grim,
isn't
it? And
1,300 in its third week.
That's grim.
The Xbox One S, meanwhile, sold 49.
49 units?
In the first week.
I want
Not 49,000, just 49.
Have they released the One X over there?
Yes, they did, in November.
Okay.
Yeah.
Why bother? They're never going to crack that market, are they? I mean, it's what, three generations in now. At some point, get the message. The Japanese don't want this system.
God. Johnny Ray McNasty, great name, says Nintendo has posted a private video on their Smash Brothers YouTube channel.
Oh, the plot thickens.
Let's get hype.
A private video? You mean like it's up there, but you can't watch it?
Yeah.
So it means all they have to do is change the setting on it,
and then it goes
to unleash it.
Now,
what?
Here's the thing, though.
I like it.
I'm the type of guy that's in these threads anytime there's a Nintendo Direct. This shit happens all the time, and it doesn't necessarily lead to anything. So that private video could have been there for a long time, and who the fuck knows? I'm trying not to get too excited here. And finally, James Akuma says, there are 37 songs on the Tony Hawk's Pro Skater 4 soundtrack. Shout out to When I'm on the Bike by Loot Pack. Shout out to that indeed. Wow, we did okay. We did okay. I don't know if there was any real corrections.
No?
Except for the Xbox One in Japan thing. Tomorrow's host will be Greg and Andrea Renee. It's going to be a good time for everybody. Gary, thank you very much for joining me.
I enjoyed myself. Thank you.
Until next week, I love you, and I'll see you soon.